Hello, and welcome to this, the seventh episode of season four of the Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I am Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Last time, Graham, or rather the time before last, actually, we talked about the need for all parties to find ways of working together in order to defeat the scourge of financial crime.
Yes, more in the style of the Avengers than Batman, I believe your analogy was, Ray.
Yes, and apparently it resonated with many of our audience.
Fantastic.
But today, as promised, we're going to take a look at the European Banking Federation's recent report entitled Lifting the Spell of Dirty Money.
And that's a very evocative title, Ray.
Indeed. Maybe we should start with a brief summary of who the EBF are.
Good idea. Now, they style themselves as, quotes, the voice of the European banking sector, bringing together national banking associations from across Europe.
A kind of Avengers for the banking sector.
Exactly.
They go on to say that they're committed to a thriving European economy that is underpinned by a stable, secure and inclusive financial ecosystem and to a flourishing society where financing is available to fund the dreams of citizens, businesses and innovators everywhere.
And Ray, given that we're recording this episode as the coronavirus outbreak is disrupting all of our lives, they are really rather poignant words.
Yes, I can't think the EBF would ever have thought they would resonate quite the way they now do.
Indeed. So that's the EBF. Let's see what they had to say about the fight against dirty money. Is there anything that particularly caught your eye initially?
Yes, there's a sentence in the foreword that kind of leaps off the page.
Oh, go on.
Well, they say, over time, the prescriptive elements of the AML-CTF regime have created a division between the management of financial crime risk and the management of financial crime compliance risk, with the latter overwhelming the former.
Well, now, that's a very eloquent way of saying something that we've been banging on about for a while.
It is, and I wish I'd written that sentence.
Well, me too, but at least you got to say it.
Yes, and it does neatly encapsulate the dichotomy that all financial institutions are currently facing.
And that's not a bad sentence either.
Eh?
Yeah, well, encapsulating a dichotomy. It's a great little phrase.
Well, thank you. The report also makes the point at the outset that although there are many other actors involved in the money laundering process, banks play a disproportionate role in the management and reporting of suspicious activity.
Okay, but this is the EBF, so in a way they would.
Well, agreed, but with some justification, I'd say.
Well, yes, and I think I would agree. So let's get to the heart of the report. What was the meat of their investigation?
20 recommendations spread across four main priorities, Graham.
Right, I guess we should talk about those recommendations then.
Yeah. Do you want, first of all, to explain what the four priorities are, Graham?
Yes, they are, quote, harmonise, empower, cooperate and be smarter.
Yeah, OK. I'm not trying to be rude here, but they're not exactly earth-shattering, are they?
Well, no, they're not. But to be fair, it would be difficult to come up with something so innovative that even the structure itself seemed to be groundbreaking.
And that's a very fair comment. And actually, if it was too innovative, it might have the counterintuitive effect of not being taken seriously because it's so far from current realities.
And that's a good point as well. OK, so let's start working our way through the specific recommendations.
OK, priority one was harmonise, and there are six recommendations that fall within that category.
And I see that recommendation one is to turn the AML directives, as far as possible, into regulations.
We should explain that within the EU, a directive is issued at EU level, and it's left to each country to transpose it into national law within a specific timeframe.
whereas a regulation becomes law immediately at the EU level.
In every country, yes. Mm. Directives have a habit of morphing a bit to suit national agendas in the way that regulations simply won't allow.
Yes, and an EU-wide set of regulations would negate, in large part, the need for banks to operate subtly different policies according to where their home regulation has been enacted.
And we know from our work developing policy governed by a different AML Act that there are differences with, for example, the UK regs, which creates tension when the bank operates in both jurisdictions.
Exactly. PEP definitions, for example, tend to be driven, at least to some degree, by the system of government in force in the enacting countries. So if you have a federal government, your view of who should and shouldn't be a PEP is likely to be different from where there is maybe a countrywide democracy enacted.
Mm. So we'd also agree that completely consistent regulation across the EU is a good thing.
Yes, although somewhat tempered, Ray, by the fact that the UK is no longer technically a member.
Graham, let's not go there.
No, Ray, let's not.
So we'd agree with their first recommendation. And the second?
The second is they want to minimise discretionary powers for member states to define instances where their national specificities need to be taken into account.
And this is to stop criminals from arbitraging rule differences across different states, to take advantage of these discretionary powers when they're applied.
Yes, and of course these differences can add to costs for multinational banks when applying their policies cross-border.
We wouldn't disagree with that one, would we?
No, as long as it leaves countries free to enhance those rules when they know that particularities within their jurisdictions are especially targeted or open to abuse by criminals.
Like the London property market or the Antwerp diamond market. Some countries are centres for particular economic activity which might need special rules to deal with.
Exactly. Okay, so the third recommendation is actually an old hobby horse of ours.
Yes, the risk-based approach, or RBA. The EBF makes the point that notwithstanding the intention of the RBA, it's still looked at through the prism of technical compliance rather than disrupting or preventing financial crime.
Yeah, and the EBF highlight an area that we've spoken about often, that of de-risking.
Yeah, their concern is that it militates against financial inclusion, which is fair enough. But I think our point on this is probably more germane, in that it just exemplifies the not-in-my-bank approach rather than the not-anywhere-at-all approach.
I completely agree. They also single out EDD on correspondent relationships as a thorny issue, which, you know, I understand that from a cost point of view, but I'm not quite so relaxed about banks returning to their own risk-based approach when dealing with their correspondents.
I agree. You've only got to look at some of the dark money flows through correspondent banks over the last 10 years or so to have concerns about relaxing those particular rules.
Yeah. The EBF also don't like the blunt instrument of automatic EDD on high-risk third-country relationships.
And there, I think I have a bit more sympathy. It's a blunt and an arbitrary rule, which could have the opposite effect by denying good actors in emerging economies that are troubled by corruption access to good quality financial services at a time we should really be encouraging it.
I completely agree. Kind of implies that there is no business that can be done with customers in certain countries that brings manageable risk that doesn't require significant enhanced due diligence. I'm just not sure I agree with that.
No, me neither. And then recommendation 5 goes on to talk about harmonising the regulations globally and across different regulatory frameworks. For example, having one single standard definition for what constitutes a beneficial owner.
And again, you know, Ray, that makes really good sense on paper, but I suspect it is much harder to do that in practice. Mm. Not that that should stop the attempt, but I don't see that as a quick win.
No, me neither. And lastly, under the harmonisation section, they talk about anticipating the potential impact of technology on the AML-CTF framework. I think this is largely in relation to new payment and other quasi-financial services, and ensure they're all caught under the one regulatory framework.
Well, we know that the criminals are very quick to exploit new technologies for their own ends. So once again, it just makes complete sense that our controls should be as agile and as adaptive as possible to meet those threats.
OK, so that's the harmonisation recommendations. Let's look at the empower ones now.
Yeah, it's a rather striking, if rather vague heading, isn't it?
It is. And there is actually some overlap between these two categories. But maybe it will make more sense when we get into the detail. What's first?
The EBF wants the role of the European Banking Authority, the EBA, to be enhanced to provide fully harmonised standards.
Now that sounds like a sensible idea. The fewer rulemakers there are, the less scope there is for difference between authorities, which we know the criminals would seek to exploit.
But it's often quite hard for decision makers to hand over that power to someone outside their borders who may not, for instance, understand their unique challenges, their legal structures, their history, etc., etc., etc.
And we're back to what we were discussing a couple of minutes ago and the way that the EU has traditionally got around this.
Yeah, which is through the use of directives, which aren't rules in their own right, but do require the individual countries to transpose and make their own rules from them.
Usually you end up with rules across countries that are pretty consistent because they must all comply with the directive.
Well, yes, but there are some issues, and particularly where technical language is used, sometimes the translations can cause unexpected issues that can result in strikingly different legislation in some extreme cases.
And we looked a couple of moments ago at the PEP issue, but is there another particular example you're thinking of, Graham?
Well, there is, Ray. Would you believe that there is a European state out there whose legislation to enact the fourth anti-money laundering directive did not require the collection of source of wealth information for PEP clients?
Really?
Yeah, and that was all down to a very slight difference in the directive's official translation.
So that's the sort of thing that this enhanced role for the EBA would get around.
It is, and for that reason I think it's a compelling recommendation.
Mm.
Now, the next recommendation is about ensuring consistent risk-based supervision.
And I wonder if they're reacting here against the very evident disparities in the kinds of sanction meted out by different national regulators.
Yeah, we've spoken about this before, and it seems like a pretty obvious enhancement.
And then there's a recommendation to harmonise and strengthen the powers of national financial intelligence units.
Yeah, and this is a response to the fact that organised crime is very well structured across borders, whereas the intelligence operation fighting it isn't.
You need an organised response to organised crime, it strikes me.
That's an excellent way of putting it, Ray. Yes. Now, next we have a recommendation to empower existing EU law enforcement bodies. There's a suggestion that Europol could be reconstituted and strengthened to become a stronger EU agency with executive powers, together with the co-opting the newly formed European Public Prosecutor's Office.
Now, this was initially set up, wasn't it, to fight crimes impacting on the EU's budget. But it wouldn't take much to expand this to look more widely at financial crime in the Union.
No, it wouldn't. So, Ray, look, we're up to recommendation 11 now, and this one is perhaps what I called earlier the duh, yeah, one. it is quite obvious, I think.
Go on.
Well, it's just simply to allocate sufficient resources to the relevant bodies to do the job properly.
Well, it doesn't sound too controversial, Graham.
Well, you'd hope not, would you, Ray? Although I'm not sure history would necessarily validate that assumption. Mm. And on top of this, as we all know, there are much more pressing priorities on the public purse at the moment.
But then there always are.
And that is true enough.
Well, that seems like an appropriate point at which to pause our coverage, I think, Graham. We've looked at harmonise and empower in the recommendations. What's next?
Next time, Ray, we're going to go on and look at those that are themed cooperate and be smarter.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dark Money Files. We hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to listen to future episodes, please subscribe through iTunes, Spotify, or your normal podcast provider. Thanks.